My name is Gail Blumberg. I am 54 years old. Today is August the 2nd, 2012, and we are in Atlanta with StoryCorps. And Al and I both run for the Gateway Back on My Feet running team.
My name is Alvin Tall. I'm 55 years old. Today is 8/2/12. I'm located at the Gateway Center. My relationship with Gail is she is my coach with Back on My Feet.
Well, Al, we have known each other for about 6 months now, and I love your story of where you came from and where you are now. So why don't you talk about where you grew up in Philadelphia and how you grew up?
First of all, I'd like to say, Gail, you have really encouraged me through your diligence in coming to practice every day, bringing out the course and telling and teaching me how to actually run. I grew up in the city of Philadelphia. I was the oldest of four boys and one girl. I grew up in a neighborhood which was really rough. My mom was very, very young. I was very, very poor. She was blackballed because she was so young having children. The other little girls couldn't play with her because of the stigma of having children at such a young age. So I had to take on the responsibility of a father because I didn't have a father. My father abandoned my mother at a young age also. By the age of 15, 16, my mother had three children. I grew up in the public school system, gangs, a lot of violence, a lot of drugs, not being able to have things that the other kids had. So by all means necessary, I thought as a young man that I would get, and I grew up stealing, robbing, using any kind of means to get material things, to the point where I got arrested, I was incarcerated, coming out, and that was a badge of honor for me to be able to be arrested and locked up, instead of using that as a way of navigating myself through life, I used it as a way of getting some kind of building up my self-esteem. And joining a gang, being a part of a gang, using gang members as role models, it introduced me into drugs. It introduced me into not going to school. It introduced me into things that were totally against my family's belief and religion. I was in the military. I wound up going to jail. It really ruined my life.
Talk about what the pressure was like when you were so young to join a gang and then the pressure to start using drugs.
At the time, it really wasn't no pressure. It was just that I felt as though I had to do to belong, smoking marijuana. To tell you the truth, smoking marijuana wasn't taboo because I learned to smoke marijuana in my basement. I learned to drink on the corners. We used drinking as a way of building up our self-esteem to a false euphoria to being invincible. You drank, then you went out and you started a gang rival with another gang. It was a way of building up a false sense of being along. So to go out and approach another group of individuals off of alcohol really was the most, as I think about it now. But then it was very, I enjoyed that. I mean, I thought it was fun. I thought it was exciting. Telling my mom to be on the steps and being defiant and not staying on the steps and trying to build a reputation with individuals that were a bunch of hoodlums, a bunch of thugs. And I thought that was what life had to offer.
What about your siblings? Did they sort of follow in your footsteps?
To tell you the truth, my brother really ran the gang. I was the oldest, but he really ran the gang. So, and because he ran the gang, I learned how to make zip guns. I learned how to fight. We had to practice in the basement every day. Me and my brother, we practiced in the basement on each other on how to fight, because you had to, when you went through or you wasn't at a meeting or you were absent from a certain gang, if they called the meeting, then they sent you through the room. This is where you had to fight five or six individuals simultaneously, and you had to have pretty good skills in order to survive. So we practiced daily, and that's how we, me and my brother, became, we grew up real close, and we had names like Alias Alfie, Pistol Pete, things of that nature.
Alias Alfie, I'm going to have to remember that one. So how did you decide, like, how was it decided for you, like, which gang you joined?
Each gang had its own turf. It had its own neighborhood. Matter of fact, we were a club at first, and we became so popular because we were wall writers. That's how I became a graphic artist, because I was a wall writer. And because we were wall writers and we became more famous than the gangs, they actually drafted us, chased us down, and drafted us into the gang at a young age. I'm talking about 12, 13, 14 years old. I'm talking about peewees, midgets, squidgets, juniors, to old heads. That was the level of gang activity. You moved up in the ranks. As you grew older, you still was in a gang. I'm talking about my old heads was 35, 40, and they had some reputations that was phenomenal. I'm talking about going through jail and holding somebody that could really hold their hands. I'm talking about they had a little thing where you can go down on to the tip of their toes and come up, like, you know, it was something that we strive to become, like, fast with your hands.
So what was it like the first time you were incarcerated?
Oh, that's funny, because when you're very young, I mean, it's the most frightening experience in the world, because, first of all, you're taken away from your family and you lose your freedom. Then you're slammed into a place where you start to learn at a young age things that I'm not able to say here in a place like this. You'll be amazed at the change and the way that you have to change your thinking in order to survive in a place where there are a bunch of villains, rapists, murderers, individuals that's totally defiant. You're talking about X generation. I'm talking about individuals with some mental problems. That's phenomenal. And the only way to survive is that you be very, very cautious about your surroundings, about who you hang with. If I came into an institution, a prison, and I had like 2 years, an individual with 7 years would not even deal with me, because after being with somebody for 2 years every day, and then to see them leave and I still have five more years to go, it's really, really very difficult to see somebody that I've grown to have a relationship with leave. Is hard.
So how old were you the first time you were incarcerated, and how long were you in for?
I went through the juvenile system. I remember the first time being locked up for, and you know, peer pressure. I was very easily led into doing the wrong thing. I wanted to always please people. I was a very pleasable person because I was very humble, but I always wanted to please because I wanted to be a part of. I wanted everybody to like me. So whatever I had to do for them to like me, and how can you get a group of gangsters and thugs to like you? You had to try to outdo a gangster. You had to outdo a thug. You had to do thuggish things. And those type of things was not my cup of tea, but I did it just to belong. And I understand that today.
Well, tell me about the wall art, because you're such an incredible artist now, and I can't wait to find out how it got started in such an interesting way.
Well, you know, the thrill of, I think the most thrilling thing is to be able to do something and get away with it. So if you do something like create your name, just your name, see it, do it at night and wake up in the morning and see your name all through the neighborhood, it gave you a sense of, it built up your self-esteem. It gave you a sense of conquering something, or it gave you a sense of being a part of, because you created this name and you practiced every day, all day, just to be able to see your name in lights. You know, when you talk about being an artist, you talk about a singer when the applause of the crowd, and you talk about a dancer as he's performing and he's finished his rendition or whatever he does and the applaud the crowd. Well, being a graffiti artist at a young age, you just look at the victory of accomplishing, climbing up on a high ladder, or climbing up on somebody's roof, or climbing up on a bridge, or climbing up on something real high just to achieve the thrill of seeing your name in lights. I realized that today. I didn't realize that now, because it was very dangerous, some of the things that we had to do and some of the skills that we had to master in order to make it multicolored. Spray paint cans, the aerosol cans, as they call it now, aerosol art.
So how did you carry everything? And tell me about the whole process, because obviously it had to be very quick because you were doing it illegally and at night and trying not to get caught. So what? Tell me how everything worked.
You just had to practice. You had to change the nozzles. You get nozzles off of different cans. You get nozzles off of – this was back then. Now they have a very moderate technique. They got different nozzles for different cans now, and you just switch them. But we had to learn how to take a nozzle off of, starch, or a nozzle off of any other kind of aerosol to get wider tips. You just had a jacket with a lot of inside pockets that you sewed in. And I can remember going into, like, Pep Boys, what they call AutoZone now, and you was – easy accessible to spray paint cans, and you just had to learn how to use it. And it wasn't hard, but it was very difficult, because you do it at night and you do it undetected.
And so did you plan the images that y'all produced, or was it just freeform when you got there and you decided what you wanted to do?
Well, you know, they tell me now that my graphics looks the same. I'm talking about, I've been practicing this for like 35, 40 years. You write it every day, every day, every day. So you become so, you can do it almost with your eyes closed. You can do it in the dark. It's just repetitious. It's like what they call muscle, you know, when your muscles just actually, your eyes just actually can do it easy, real easy. I mean, who can't write their name? You learn that in school, write your name. That's the first thing you learn. So if you just change it and modify it to where it becomes something that's appealing to the eye, something that catches. But, you know, also it was very dangerous too, because I caught my first case writing on trains and writing on buses and writing on walls. And I made a vow that one day that they would pay me for my name. And that's still my quest today. That's why I'm in school and I do what I do.
So at what point did it translate from, you know, stealth in the night on the walls to your actual public murals that you did in Philadelphia?
After being a graffiti artist, being arrested several times, and finally realizing that there is a way that I can actually become a professional, but I had to go to school. I quit a job to go to school because I didn't want to work in a factory. And I went to school. And you're talking about going to school as a graphic designer 30 years ago. It was easy then. It was easy for me because I remember only having 3 sets of clothes to wear. I remember going through photography without a camera. They didn't even know I didn't have a camera. I can remember one day we had an interior design, 3D design. We had to make a lamp. I went around and cut everybody's lamp on and critiqued everybody's lamp. And the teacher finally said to me, she said, "Alvin, where's your lamp?" I didn't even have a lamp because I couldn't afford the foam board that it took to carve the lampshade out of and the little thing that went through the lamp in order to put the light bulb in. It was very hard for me to make it through school, but I thank God that it was only one class that I actually failed, and that was art history. And I was just telling that story. I failed art history, and that is the only book that I ever bought in school and never read it. I think about that today because going to school today, I read, I do extensive studying, I have done essays. This is today, it seemed like I'm very renowned in what I'm doing, but I didn't have no idea that I went through school and didn't absorb any kind of knowledge in order to be a productive member of society. This is one of the things that back on my feet let me come to understand that it's a lot of work that it takes in order to be a productive member of society. I wanted to be successful and back on my feet. It was the only real group that I was a part of that showed me enough love to be able to help me to cross over to be successful. There are so many times in my life that I had the opportunity to face and become successful, but I didn't have no kind of love. I didn't have nobody to just give me a little nudge and say that you're going in the right direction. I resented not having a father for so long, but I didn't realize that I resented not having a father. I didn't know that I was drawn to these negative individuals because I was resenting the fact of not having a father. And I always said as a young man growing up that I wish I would have had a father. It would have helped me to be able to cross over so many hurdles. I wouldn't have been so easy to fall into these holes. And so today, that's why I've been married so many times. That's why all the girls that I had, I always wanted to be a father. I didn't want my children to grow up without having a father. And it cost me a lot because I didn't know what it was like to be a family man. I just knew that I didn't want my children to grow up without having a father. And I lost myself in the process. So because of being in Gateway, being a part of going through drugs, being a drug addict, smoking and drinking for so many years, and winding up in a place like Gateway, and to have come out of Gateway, meeting in the back to do the physical exercise, that was the first, and I just now realized that today, that coming outside and being a part of Back on My Feet was my first interaction with society as a whole. Because when I went in to Gateway, I didn't want to have anything to do with society. I didn't want to be a productive member of society. I realize that now. I didn't realize that when I was growing up, why I was so rebellious, why I didn't want to be successful, why I thought that I was less than because I couldn't read. Or I thought that I couldn't read. I always wanted to write poetry, but I never sat down and took the time to do something that I really wanted to do for myself. I always was trying to please somebody else. And then when I came to Gateway and I started to realize that my disease started before I even picked up a drug. And I can remember being isolated, being up in my room, not wanting to socialize. But I picked the wrong organization to be a part of. So now that I had the opportunity to be introduced to Back on My Feet, and back, just the name alone really attracted my attention. And so I had to find out what this Back on My Feet was. And I was on a waiting list a long time. And because of the progression of the endurance. And I want people to know that just because that you can't run 3 miles or 2 miles, the endurance that it takes physically to get up every morning at 5:45 when you didn't even go to bed to that time, and you had to build up your mind to be able to say that I'm gonna get up 5:45 3 days a week, and no matter what it takes, that 90% participation in order to be successful, that endurance that it takes to be successful is what I learned the most. And I can remember sometimes feeling less because of my physical condition. I thought at one time that I was invincible, that I can do anything. I run across the street. I can run. I used to can run real fast, outrun anybody. They used to call me way back in elementary school, Black Rabbit, because I really was fast. And then when I came to realize that I was older and mature, but my body wouldn't respond as I could remember it used to. You know, and it could have been the drugs, but being a part of back on my feet and building up my endurance, and the fact that I had to get up in the morning, I had to be responsible. I had to be responsible for myself. I didn't have my wife. I didn't have my family anymore. I didn't have anybody that I could rely on. So I had to find a whole new way of looking at life. I had to find a whole new perspective to find out what really motivated me. And what motivated me was the fact that I had people that loved me, that hugged me in the morning and say, Al, no matter what, if you only can walk a mile and you can't run it, we're still here with you. Somebody will walk with you. And I think that was the main attraction. And before I realized it, and then I can remember, and I'm going to share this with you, Gail. I can remember seeing you come out there in the morning. I was like, wow, she's really nice looking. You know, you really, I mean, to be as mature as you were, I mean, you know, it really inspired me to see that you win, that you're determined, you know, and you remind me of a real close friend of mine that I had in Philadelphia. And then the other individuals in the group, and I'm not going to name them all because it's a team. Team Gateway has really been a major force in my determination, and it has helped me in school. You know, I didn't want to be able to say, like I said so many times before, I used to sabotage, and that was my disease. That was the drugs. I used to get to a certain level, and I just wouldn't go any further because I didn't want to be responsible for other individuals or other people. I did murals for the city of Philadelphia for a long time. I was in the public school system with kids for a long time. And at just at one certain point, when the drugs started taking control, the progression. They say the progression. When 90% of my thinking was using to live and living to use, and I couldn't show the kids, and I didn't want to be that type of role model, I just turned away and walked away. And I'm looking for now the opportunity. And I thought about when I was coming up, everything that I have, somebody gave me. You know what I mean? And if it wasn't for the opportunity of what Back on My Feet offers, that if you continue to run and you show 90% participation, you'll be able to gain something substantial that'll be able to help you to be successful in society. Well, I wouldn't be able to ever afford. It is a dream to me to just think that eventually I'll have a laptop. Mm-hmm. And the thing about this laptop is that I work for it.
You've worked for it hard. You have been out there walking and running. You've worked for it so hard. But do you know what one of my favorite mornings with you is? And this was right when you had almost just started, and we were going around a circle talking about what we had done for the weekend, and you walked up and said, I got married this weekend. And we said, you got married. And so we can't wait to meet your wife. But tell me about your wife and how y'all met. And she's been such a wonderful support to you. She has been so great.
You know, that is really a really fantastic story because I was supposed to came to Atlanta. We agreed to come to Atlanta. She's been here 7 years. I've been here too. We agreed to come to Atlanta together. And she left. I didn't leave because I was still using drugs. She has 13 years clean. And I couldn't come because I was off somewhere. Another one of my sabotaging stories. And so she kept coming back. Kept coming back to Philly. I tried to elude her. And I finally made up in my mind that I would leave Philadelphia. And it was so hard leaving Philly. It almost killed me leaving the city of Philadelphia. By the time I got to Atlanta, I had to go straight to Atlanta Medical. I had caught all kinds of poison ivy. I had got beat up that night because I caught poison ivy hustling, you know, cutting weeds, cutting grass, doing anything to try to get another hit, another drink. And by the time I got to Atlanta, I was so wore out. I went to Atlanta Medical, and she was so inspirational because by the time I got to Atlanta, I got family here. My family wouldn't even help me. And she came to my rescue, and she did so much to help motivate me. She's one of the main reasons why I was in Gateway, because it had to be the drugs or her. And she said, "Alvin, I cannot risk my recovery, and I love you, but I cannot risk what I worked on so long to be with you. So it's either me or the drugs." And so I went into Gateway, and she was where she was at. And I said to myself, knowing that I had a spiritual background, knowing my morals, I knew that she didn't never get married because she didn't never live with anybody. And I knew that I didn't want to disrespect her by living with her. So she went into a shelter. I went into a shelter. And I said to myself that if I was to marry anybody, and this is my fourth wife, if I was to marry anybody, and she showed and proved to me that she really loved me, that she would do anything for me. And I said, I would never get married again. But I said that I would marry you. If nobody else, I'll marry you. And we got married both in the shelter, and we're still in there today. But we're looking forward to moving together. But the most wonderful thing about it is that we'll be moving into a house as husband and wife. I don't have to worry about committing no kinds of fornication, no kind of abomination, because I know that our relationship has been blessed. I've been truly blessed by marrying this woman because she actually helps me pay for my financial aid. She pays for my phone. And I'm not saying that she just pays for my phone, but she convinces me that she's paying for this because it's to help me. It's not to hold it over my head. It's not to belittle me, but it's to encourage me to do the best that I can. She said that I'm her best investment. And that is so wonderful. And she is so sweet. And she loves me to death. And through all of my experiences with my past wives, my experiences has let me see that I really love her. I really would do. And that's what's motivating me too. That's what helped me with back on my feet also. Because she reminds me, "Oh, you got to run this morning. You want me to call you at 5? You got to run this morning." I'd be like, even if I didn't feel like it. So she has been a great asset as being a part and being a partner to help encourage me to do things that reap positive benefits. To help me to be able to understand that I am important. And I let her know that she's just as important to me as I am to myself. And it has helped me to be a whole new different man, a whole new different outlook on relationships, love, working together, both of y'all working to the common goal. I've been married several times. And I guarantee you, if you don't take the time out to understand your mate and find out what y'all really have in common, instead of just going out here, having sex, and then the girl get pregnant, and because she having a baby, her thought was, "Oh, I'll get him by having a baby. He won't leave me because I have his baby." That's where that baby mama my baby daddy. But when you're talking about your wife, when you talk about your husband, when you're talking about a relationship, building something that's going to be productive, that's going to be beneficial to the both of you. My wife works two jobs, and all she talks about is that she works those jobs in order to help us to be successful. And you can best believe when the time comes, if I ever be successful, I'm going to be with the help of back on my feet with this laptop, and I am so excited, and being able to accomplish something, be a productive member of society, I can't wait. I'm so excited about just molding back in, talking like I know what I want, talking with some confidence, walking with confidence, holding my head up high, feeling a lot better because even though I didn't walk 2-3 miles, you can best believe I'm in the best shape that I think a man of 55 could be in after living again from drugs and being on drugs and going and being incarcerated, being in jail, going through what he had to go through in order to leave the city of Philadelphia because it was really hard. You know, those kind of places, it's hard because you're so used to it. I'm talking about 55 years in a city.
And now you're getting the chance to showcase your art in front of a whole bunch of people at our race this month. Have you started, because you're going to paint a mural that people can be photographed in front of at the race. Have you started thinking about your design yet?
Oh, yeah. I've been thinking about the design ever since it was brought to my attention. If it's in my mind, if I can ever get the chance to execute it, it's phenomenal. I think that I really would like to try to design something that everybody can be a part of, have a little footprint in, like the edges. I'm only sharing that with you. I'll have a way that before it's actually done, that everybody can put a footprint around the edges as the border.
Oh, you want me to keep a secret?
Of course. I'll share it with you.
Oh, that's going to be so awesome. I cannot wait. Because everyone on Team Gateway has seen your artwork, and we're just in love with what you do. And now we get to showcase it to all the runners and all the volunteers at Back on My Feet, and we'll get to post it on the Facebook page so everyone will get to see how talented you are. And you know, I'm so impressed with your dedication because think of, like, in the past couple of weeks, there were a couple of times where your alarm didn't go off and you looked out the window and you said, they're there. And
Right. And
you came downstairs anyway and you did the walk anyway, even though you were on your own that morning and came back up and circled up with us at the end. And, you know, between that and between, you know, how hard you're working at school, you can just feel the difference and the dedication in your life and that you are going to be successful now.
You know, I think that to all the members of Back on My Feet, because when we share our question in the morning, when we say that we're going to run forever, and when we share in the camaraderie of hugging, I feel something from that. I draw for that. And this has been one of the most heartwarming experiences because it was something that I'd never done before. And they say, if you expect something different, then do something different. I can remember getting up every morning hanging on the corners. I can remember being dedicated to wanting to be one of the biggest and best thieves in the city of Philadelphia. But now I can look back and I can stand on my feet, my own 2 feet, and realize that I'm able to accomplish far more than my little carnal mind could ever have imagined if I continue to just trust my higher power, because he puts people in my life, like Back on My Feet, Team Gateway, in order to help me to strive and stay on my feet. And now that I'm back on my feet, I don't think I'm going to let anything knock me off.
And you know what my second favorite part of Back on My Feet is, besides what we do every week, is that there is an alumni program so that when you leave Gateway and you move in with your wife, that we are still going to be in touch and still be friends and still keep in contact. And so we'll get to keep up with everything that you're doing and watch your progression through school and see your art. And to me, that's one of my favorite things, because we get to see you be successful, but you don't just go off and we never see you again. We get to still keep in touch?
You know, I talked to Andrew about 2 weeks ago, and he let me know that he wasn't going to be a part or be involved. And he told me a little bit about the mentoring program or what they do and what he was doing. And I'm going to tell you, a lot of the things that I have done thus far, I really didn't want to do. But I found that there were the things that I didn't want to do that I have the most success at. And I would love to be able to go and speak and talk about the camaraderie, the inspiration, the love that was shared, and the success of the actual program, of what it has done, not only in my life, but the life that it has done inside the Gateway. Y'all see us outside, but it's something to be a part of back on my feet inside the Gateway. It's just a little more inspiration when you see somebody with a T-shirt on, or you see somebody that you know that you have ran with that morning. It's just a little bit more inspiring. And I think Get Back on My Feet for the support, the sneaks, the outfits, dressing as a team, being a part of a team, has done so much for our character, for those individuals inside the Gateway that has no character, that has no inspiration. What do you belong? We see y'all every morning. We're so proud. Y'all motivators. Y'all, you know, y'all so dedicated. And that's the kind of inspiration, the kind of dedication, the kind of mentor or inspiring other individuals to be able to reach beyond their imagination with the support of an organization such as Back on My Feet. And I'm really, really proud to have experience this through being in Gateway, and Gateway allowing me to understand that I'm not responsible for my disease. I'm responsible for my recovery, and Gateway has given me an outlet to be able to experience the fact of living a clean and sober life.
I love that, and I love our team. I love how close our team is, and I'll tell you the difference from December when I joined, and no one really knew each other, and you'd be checking on someone, you'd say, well, you know, so-and-so's not here today, where is he? And someone would say, I don't know who that is. And now you can be darn sure that if I send you inside and say, where's Russell, you know exactly where he is and what's going on with him, and we can check up on everyone and make sure everyone's okay, and that we're, you know, just...
You know, and I'm glad you said that, because that is the distinction of coming outside of Gateway, is knowing that y'all concerned about us. Y'all know where we at, and the concern about y'all knowing where we at inside is that it extends outside too, that we know where y'all are. And once I get outside, I'm going to let y'all know where I'm at. And I know that y'all will be able to, be able to reach out and come and get me, come and find me. I know we only required to run one day a week, but what has been achieved thus far with 3 days a week, running in the morning, I'm able to face that day with so much energy, so much enthusiasm. It has been phenomenal, and I am really grateful. And I thank you, Gail, for being one of the most inspiring coaches that I have ever encountered. Most coaches are big, old, you know, old guys, but it was a pleasure seeing you walk across the street in the morning with your little envelope. It has really encouraged me to take another step beyond the steps that I thought I could take.
Well, I appreciate every morning when I cannot read my routes because it's too dark and I don't have my reading glasses, that y'all are very patient with me as I pass them around for everyone to see exactly where we're going. And we haven't lost anyone yet, have we?
No, we haven't.
Been a few times when he had to go in search of some people. But I love waking up Atlanta with you in the morning. That's so much fun, to go around the streets of Atlanta when it's dark and say hey to everyone we pass, and everyone wants to know who we're with and what we're doing. And it's so fun to wake up Atlanta with you. And it's been... And when you move out, I know your schedule is going to change a little bit, but we want you to come back as much as you can in the mornings and come and run with us.
I'm not going anywhere, thank God. I'm not going anywhere.
It's been a pleasure. So thank you.
Thank you so very much.